Hi everyone, and I hope your week is going well. As I was thinking about our passage for this weekend, I wondered why Paul thought it necessary to include it. Why was it important? What did he want to achieve? Earlier in the letter, he's reminded us about the amazing things that God has done for us, the things that Jesus has done for us, the blessings he has poured into our lives, the things that the Spirit has done, does do, and will do for us. He's spoken about relationship we've been brought into with God, the blessings we have received. And in response to that, Paul has encouraged us to live as those who recognise that blessing and to bring honour to Jesus in and through the church. But now, Paul changes his focus to who we are when we're away from church gatherings, when we're in our homes, with our families, in our workplaces. Places where we spend a lot of our time, people we spend a lot of time with, and where we are seen as who we really are when the masks are put away, literally as well as figuratively these days. And into that context, Paul calls on us to live in a way that honours God and models what it means to live in relationship with him. Our private lives, our personal behaviours, our conduct at work, these all matter. These are all important. They're important to us. They're important to those who are closest to us. Also important in the work of God's kingdom. It's important at all times, but we've seen the particular importance of it during these times of lockdown, with reports of domestic abuse and child abuse escalating. And when lots of questions are being asked of employers and employees, with all the uncertainty around businesses in the future. We are called to demonstrate loving and right relationships, even in these challenging times, and to model what that could look like to a world that is struggling and hurting. It is probably fair to say that this passage has caused a lot of controversy over the years, with accusations being made that Paul did not like women, he wanted to ensure that they stayed in their place, or that he should have taken the opportunity to speak out about slavery and try to bring it to an end. This passage has been used to argue against social reform and to maintain the status quo, to benefit men and those in positions of authority, holding back equal rights for women, supporting inappropriate behaviour towards children, slowing down reforms in the workplace. I believe that's really unfortunate. I want to suggest that what Paul was saying was something very different to that. Something that was important and helpful then, and is important and helpful now. It's important to think about what Paul is saying in relation to what he wrote to the church at Galatia 10 years or so earlier, where in chapter 3, 28, he says these amazing, powerful, society-transforming words. There is neither Jew nor Gentile, neither slave nor free, nor is there male and female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. There he argues that because of Jesus, we are all in the same privileged position as children of God. No group is more important or prominent than another. Our status is the same. Paul is not saying that ethnic difference no longer exists. He is not saying that slavery has gone away. He is not saying that gender is no longer relevant. What he is saying is that the important thing now that comes before any of these differences is our unifying relationship in Christ. Everything else is secondary to that and has to be understood in that context. This was a major and powerful statement, and one which went against cultural and social understanding at the time, when foreigners, women and slaves were seen very much as inferior. Paul is stating clearly that this is not true. All are equally valued in Christ. So how does Paul get from there to what he says here in Ephesians? It's important to understand a detail in the text. In 5:21, Paul calls on each person to submit to the other because of their reverence for Christ. Two things are worth noting. This is actually a continuation from 5:18, where we are called to be filled by or filled with the Spirit. And we thought about that a few weeks ago. And Paul then lists five things we should do as a consequence of this. Speak to one another with psalms and songs. Sing, make music, give thanks, and now submit to one another. We are called to relate in this way as one of the consequences of being filled by the Spirit and guided by Him. And then the other thing worth noting in verse 22 is that many of our translations are something like, wives, submit yourselves to your own husbands, or wives, be subject to your husbands. But the word submit does not appear in the underlying text. It is more like, wives to your own husbands. So Paul is calling on everyone, in verse 21, to submit to each other, and then goes on to explain first what this looks like for the wives, and then what it looks like for the husbands. And it's important to note that there is nothing here about someone seeking to dominate or exert control over someone else. It is all about voluntarily giving of oneself to someone else. Paul does recognise in verse 24 that the husband has authority over his wife. He's expected to have a leadership role in their relationship. And Paul calls on wives to submit to that authority in the same way as they submit to Christ. But in doing so, he was not calling on the wives to do anything more than what their culture already demanded and expected of them. In their society, this is how they were expected to behave. They were seen as inferior. But Paul is saying something very different. He uses the same word when he talks about submission to speak about Jesus being subject to his Father. You get this in 1 Corinthians 15, 28. And so it is not speaking about one being inferior to another. It's speaking about things being done according to God's order, according to God's plan, as one willingly submits to another, so that God has the preeminence, God has the glory. Wives were to willingly submit themselves to their husbands as a demonstration of their commitment to Christ. Not because they had no choice, not even because their culture demanded it. In doing so, they were to demonstrate to the world how the church is to live and act under the authority of Jesus. It was to be an acted parable of what it means to live as church under Christ. For husbands, what Paul is calling for is much more demanding. And it goes against the expectations and customs of his society when the wife was totally subject to her husband's wishes and expected to provide for his needs. Rather, the husband is to love his wife in the same way as Christ loves the church. We get this in verse 25. He is called in verse 28 to love her as much as he loves himself. Is to provide for her, to care for her, to put her interests above his own, just as Christ did for the church. And in doing so, the husband demonstrates to the world how much Jesus loved the church and what he was prepared to do for it. Something similar is called for in the relationship between children and parents. Again, in a world where children were totally subordinate to their parents. The call for obedience is not new. But here, children are called to show respect as well. It's to be a loving relationship, not one built on fear. And fathers, no, the charge is towards fathers. We're not to exploit their position of authority, but to recognise their responsibility to teach their children the ways of God. And again, we see something similar in the relationship between slaves and masters in a context where 30% of people were thought to be in slavery at any particular time. Slaves are to willingly obey their masters as a worked example of what it means to be obedient to Jesus. Masters are to treat their slaves well as a demonstration of the care Jesus has for everyone. Paul's focus here was not on getting rid of the institution of slavery, but for how it was worked out between believers to demonstrate something of what it means to live in relationship with and under the authority of Jesus. Paul's message was revolutionary. It was countercultural, even though maybe not in the way we have thought about it before. It was a call for every believer to live in an attitude of preferring others over themselves, But above and beyond that, it was a call for every believer, husband or wife, parent or child, master or slave, to demonstrate something of the nature of Jesus and to demonstrate to those around what it means to live in relationship with him. Politicians sometimes argue that what they do at home, what they do in their personal lives, is private and doesn't matter. We shouldn't take that into account when we consider who they are. It is only what they do publicly that counts. Paul says something very different. It is how we live in relationship with those who are nearest and closest to us that can make a powerful statement about who we are in Christ and what he means to us. Let's be those who are prepared to put these principles into action and point people to Jesus by doing so. Here are some questions to think about. What does this passage tell you about Jesus? What characteristics do Paul's words call for in our relationships? And how do we demonstrate these characteristics if we are not currently in any of the relationships Paul speaks about?